Japan. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL Holly Eva, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox, and it is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Canvas, the Malie Foundation. I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that right. And we're going to hear a little bit about our upcoming fun drive, because you are what keeps this station on the air, and we love you for it, too. So, mahalo.
KKCR's Spring Fun Drive starts Monday, May 5th. We invite you to join KKCR by becoming a Wave Rider. For a $150 donation, your business or organization message will be aired over 70 times during our 11-day membership drive. In addition to great exposure and supporting Kauai Community Radio, Wave Riders will also receive a 3-month link on KKCR's website. Wave Rider forms are available at kkcr.org or phone 826-7774. Get your message on the air and be part of the sound of Kauai. Ke kane o Kauai nei.
Kauai Canvas, professional gallery quality giclée canvas printing and digital image capture now available on Kauai. Managing print flow, stretching, and even crating. More information at 212-6971. Or online at kauaicanvas.com. Kauai Canvas, stretch your imagination.
In the year of Nā Mea Hanalima, the year of master crafters, Malie Foundation presents Nā Lei Hiva Hiva E Hiku, Friday, May 2nd, starting at 6 p.m. at the Kauai Beach Resort, featuring Kuini, the Triple T's, the Kauai King Kamehameha Celebration Pa'u Queen, and a special appearance by Nathan Kalama and his May Day Lei Court. More information and tickets at Vicky's Fabrics and Kauai Music and Sound in Kapa'a and at the Kauai Beach Resort. Also, by calling 652-4497 and online at maliefoundation.org.
Shh! It's KKCR's Silent Fun Drive. From now until the start of our spring membership drive on May 5th, we encourage you to participate in our Silent Drive. All Silent Drive contributors will be entered into a drawing to win a couple's massage at one of the several Hawaiian rainforest spas on Kauai. Help us reach our goal by making a donation today by calling 826-7774 or online at kkcr.org. KKCR, Ke kane o Kauai nei, the sound of Kauai.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. This is Felicia, and in the studio with me, I have Teddy Blake. Teddy, talk to the mic for a second.
Hi.
Okay, he's there. He's mic'd up. It's always important that I get that figured out. Great always to follow the homegrown Garden Island Bluegrass Show. Consciousness and music at the same time with some levity. So, Teddy, today we are going to actually have an eclectic mix of topics. And I'll probably run down them quickly so you and the listener will know what to expect. We were going to have the dairy folks in here from Kalua to talk. And they might be able to make another show, but it turned out that they had a meeting they couldn't avoid in Oahu. So it wasn't for lack of desire to come. But so I did do my homework already for that show. So I put a bunch of questions down that I might try at some point early in this show. Throw it out there so we can have some Akamai listeners that give it a little bit of thought. So when the show does finally happen, we'll have really informed questions. Other people will have some. I know that you have followed that issue a bit. It's your hometown of Kailua, born and raised there, correct?
Yes.
So, and I will just expose my non-bias at the very beginning. The part of me that's all about resilient agriculture and homegrown food thinks, well, there's a platform in here that I could wrap my mind around. I look at it at the surface. It's not really stoked about everything in it, but I see that, you know, I will honestly encourage some adaptations and things that I think might make it stronger. And then just also letting the listener know what they can expect in this next 2 hours. There's some First Amendment rights on campuses coming up, both at UH Hilo, about passing out little copies of the Constitution. Apparently that was seen as inappropriate for students to give other students copies of the U.S. Constitution at a learning institution. So that person was sanctioned, and she has since filed suit. We'll talk a little bit more in detail on that. Two of our students at KCC were sanctioned for having a Shame on Syngenta banner at school that they were holding. So I guess that became a big issue. So we'll hear a little bit more about that. Jonathan Ho'omanuanui, who is the Republican candidate for District 14, he's going to be calling in about an hour, just giving a bit of his platform. That is Eastside North Shore. Derek Kawakami, Democrat, is the incumbent in that position. I don't know if there's anybody else running or not, but Jonathan is on the Republican ticket. What I learned this week at the Open Space Commission meeting, Steve Hunt, the County Director of Finance, brought up that the county bond rating dropped from a AA rating to an A-. This is an issue that's going on around the country in municipalities, states, and even the U.S. government has had these bond rating drops. Bonds are something that help a county raise revenue or any municipal government raise revenue in a form of a loan. So we will discuss that a little bit. I did some homework on it. I read the county audited financial report. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about the budget. This time, talking about the financial report, is the difference between what are we planning in theory for next year versus looking at, well, what did we actually spend last year? And I'm trying to really understand the long-term asset column. So we might talk a little bit about that. I got a few newspapers sitting right in front of me. They're that headline today in the Garden Island was about changing the county charter. There is a petition going around for an initiative to be on the ballot to change the county charter, which is like the Constitution. And a pretty stunning article on the front page of the paper that I see as treating the public process as a nuisance. I think I'm a little disappointed. I really like the Garden Island lately, but there has been a number of consecutive articles trying to bias the general public against the people who are been politically active. We had a front page article calling the citizens eco-terrorists for complaining about not being told what poisons are being sprayed and asking for a buffer zone around schools. We have yesterday's paper was on the cost of litigation, asking really important questions. Do they add attorneys or do they keep getting these special counsels? We do seem to have relentless lawsuits against the county, everything from the trivial to the very large. And then we had two articles on Sunday, you know, about clocking in on county overtime, because when we're looking at how do we cut the money back, we're looking at millions of dollars in overtime pay. Do we take away our open space funding? I struggled with that one. That's why I went to that meeting. But there was also kind of an article that stunned me in here about from the chief of police basically talking about what caused these unexpected overtimes. And so, again, picking on the movement behind 2491, which is asking for pesticide disclosure, asking to know what's being sprayed. And, you know, it looked like it was about 2% of the overtime cost, but it was the focus of this article and apparently the focus of the meeting that, like, those darn active citizens not being discouraged and waiting 24 hours outside in the pouring rain and allowing themselves to be scanned like they're going on the plane for weapons and whatever else, children, grandmothers. Those apparently are problems that are being highlighted. So you can hear a little bit of a tone in my voice. I'm disappointed to see that characterization. So that will come up. If there's people who feel the opposite way, I certainly appreciate a call in at 826-7771. There is a hike down to the new subdivision in Waipake tomorrow for the mile-long proposed trail to be beach access. Currently, that goes to like a 12-foot drop, but you know, maybe that can be. Meet at the beach. Okay, I'm seeing I got another thing there, but it's called Kahuaina Field Trip. So thank you, Kahuaina, for having people come. That's tomorrow morning, first field trip. Looks like I'm kind of getting detailed here. It's going to be 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. That is on Ko'olau Road, 7480 Ko'olau Road. And the more people come and look, that's how we keep our trails open. But again, it's a funding issue, too. How does the county manage to keep that open? And finally, I do have on my list to talk about Representative Jessica Woolley, who that can be definitely seen as a success for people who are really concerned about having food grown in Hawaii for people who are going to eat it in Hawaii. And she was confirmed 17-8 with a yes vote. And do you remember the name of that position, Teddy? I have it in here somewhere.
OEQC?
Pardon me?
Office of Environment.
Let me see here. I've got it. Sorry. Director for Office of Environmental Quality Control.
Quality Control.
And so that's going to make it be that it's easier for people who do. That would be the assumption. It's going to be friendly to farmers who want to grow food for eating in Hawaii. And so it would be something maybe, hopefully, that will help the resilience of the state in having food grown. Do you have any topics for discussion that were important to you, Ted?
Open space. Oh. And I've got to be...
You got to be clear, you're an open space commissioner.
I'm an open space commissioner, so I can't get into detail about it. But it's a big concern of mine, and I'm happy to be sitting on this commission that can possibly do something about it. I'm slightly concerned, not totally, but slightly concerned about our funding being taken, but to pay for shortfalls in the budget. I understand we do have shortfalls. We do have some money in there, and you know, when you got to help, you got to help. It's just you don't want to have to come back begging to put that money back. You know, so I'm looking for a sunset or something like that. And then
you're going to go to the Loka'ia conference on Maui.
In Maui,
tomorrow.
It's the second state conference on Loka'ia. It's being held in Hana, and I think we have like about 150 people going, and Kauai is quite well represented.
I know Kapuli Torio is going from...
Yoshi is going also.
Is Yoshi going also? I think Buddy
Keala
is going to go.
We got a number, the Hornsteins, which are Palamas from Numilo, on the right by the coffee fields in Kalaheo. They have the most unique fish pond in Hawaii. It's actually a pu'u. It's an old crater. And it is the deepest. I think it goes at least 40 feet. And it's quite unusual with local eel.
Well, I mean, that's great. And we had the Merry Monarch Festival this last weekend. Is it fair to call you a Hawaiian practitioner? At least you seem to be very focused on preservation of Hawaiian cultural artifacts.
I'm very focused on Hawaiian artifacts. I've never thought of my, and I mean, I'm just, to me, I'm a concerned citizen and partial to my native culture. If that makes me a Hawaiian practitioner, so be it. But I don't go around with that tag on my, on my card.
But, I mean, whenever I really get into a conversation with you, that seems to always come up, that keeping the Hawaiian elements of what our culture is, to make sure it stays what it is rather than what it has been.
Right. It's what's interesting, Felicia, is that you hear people talk about Malama Aina, Aloha Aina, ecology, sustainability. And when I look around the Pacific and I look at all the Pacific Rim Islands or nations, there's one common physical trait that they all have. And they're all like about 5'6" tall. And they live on...
You're saying Asia.
Asia. Around the Pacific Rim. And it's interesting because they have big land masses. And then little old Hawaii or most of the Polynesian islands, no Costco, no Matson serving them in the old days, they're by themselves. So for centuries, they lived with aloha aina, sustainability, and ecology. So you know that they have a good sense of this. And you had to maintain it and think hard about it so you would perpetuate it for the next generation. And I think that's where our disconnect is right now. If there's no badge or gun standing right next to you, you're not thinking about sustainability. And that's a big problem we have. I see guys on television, OC-16, they got the latest wetsuits, and they got, the spear guns that travel for miles, and they shoot 160-pound ulua's. And what is that for, sustainability or sport?
Right.
You ever tried eating an oshu? That's what an olulua looks like.
Mm.
That's what the meat's like. And all these things do is reproduce. So if that happened in the old days, that guy who shot that fish would be fish food real
right.
quick.
So the environmental...
Yeah, it's just, we've changed. Everything's for the glory of the guy who shoots it now. And not thinking about what damage he's doing to the...
The environment, the whole ecosystem,
yeah,
really.
The whole ecosystem.
Well, that is definitely a very big and important part. And the local IA, like to me, what I say, and I had this discussion with my students at my middle school yesterday, why we learn about local IA, why we learn fishing practices, why we learn hunting practices. And we have to be keeping a weather eye on the environmental changes. And so when we see these big ships, these monster ships from different nations, they're starting to harvest the bottom of the ocean floor around Hawaii for semi-precious metals. This is, we are out. And that's what we have in our little phones and our computers and all this high technology. So high technology is not going to be able to get us out of our energy messes and things like that. So we can shift now, or we can be forced to shift later. And I think it is just so essential that we keep these skills, these practices, and this knowledge in Mana'o current and moving forward. I think it's an essential step and a smart step. And I think it was what you were saying, that, you know, we see people, the Islander people, are just these specimens of health, big, huge, strong people. And we see people that come from places that have less strong diet. They move to America. Maybe some of it is the hormones in the food. But, you know, you see people that are 5'6", have sons that are 6'2". And, you know, diet definitely does influence how we are. And so clearly Hawaii and most of Polynesia had something that worked right. So it's very important to be looking at that. We were going to have the dairy people on because we're talking about food now. And I'm looking forward to having them. I've been researching it. There's definitely some things that it sounds to me like need to be improved. You know, what I hope can be created is a win-win. Do you know these people?
Yep.
And I've spoken to you. You don't seem to be too distressed about the dairy.
We they approached us as a community association at Malama Koloa last year sometime. I think maybe it was December or November. And they talked about the dairy and, you know, and so I mean, I knew nothing about the mechanics of a dairy. And then in February, they took us on an inspection tour. And this is after they had sent us copies of the NHCS or NRCS report. It's a 100-page report.
National Conservation Resource.
You got it. Okay. That's it. And we went around, and I'm very familiar with the area that they're having their dairy in. You know, younger days we went hunting down there. I was growing taro down there, and I know that place very well. So it's been put into important ag lands, and that's what Malama Mahoʻolipu has been fighting for. They didn't want anything but ag down there. So you have a company that comes in and does a dairy. Then we start getting all this, you know, they didn't do an EA, they didn't do this, they didn't do that. Unfortunately, for the people who are bringing up these claims, if they check into what's required for agriculture, you don't have to do this. That's the state laws. This wasn't made up by Ulupono. You know, and they're just following the law. So they said, well, shouldn't they be a good neighbor and do an EA? I said, why don't you be a good neighbor and why don't you pay for the EA? Same smell, you know? I mean, easy to talk about somebody doing it. Why don't you do it if it means that much?
Well, and a challenge that can happen with environmental assessments, EAs, is sometimes people will believe the results come from the perspective whoever pays for it. Very sure. Often an environmental assessment is done that says, yeah, you know what, there's no damage. And people go, yeah, of course it says there's no damage because you paid for the environmental assessment, so you're going to get the outcome that you want. So questioning it becomes an issue. I did look at some things here. It's definitely not an organic dairy. It's like more of a conventional dairy. So I'm just looking at how they can...
What they explained to us was that 70% of the food they feed the cows will be grass. It'll be grass-fed. 30% will be grain. And the 30% grain that they feed the cows happens when they're in the milking shed. They need to make sure they got the proper nutrients, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the people on the tour said, is this organic or is this GMO free? He says, and the manager of the farm said, I doubt it.
Yeah, it's probably likely to be GMO grains. But let's even speak to that for a moment. On this island, we grow GMO corn and GMO soy fine, which means corn and soy grow here. So I look at this as here's an economic development opportunity for a farmer to grow either organic corn or organic soil or soy, or at least not heavily engineered corn and soy, so we could grow that. I looked into alfalfa because I grew up in alfalfa areas. I guess it's harder for that to grow in the soil here. But what I did find out is they have this grass. They have a special grass that they're doing. It's called Kikuyu grass. Mm-hmm. And that can be planted with legumes in between it. And so if you plant that where you're punching in legumes every so often, it both helps to keep the grass itself healthier. You won't need to use fertilizers. You know, it's very important that the manure actually fertilizes this area rather than putting chemical fertilizers on it. And so there's actually a lot of solutions. So they could be interspersing the grass with certain legumes. It seems like there's about 7 different legumes that are appropriate in the tropical soils. And so I think that that's one way to avoid putting the chemical fertilizers on it that isn't so good, because as soon as you get all those nitrates in the cow, then they're going to need more antibiotics and so forth.
I don't know how much chemical fertilizers they're going to put in. I do know that the water from the two holding ponds they have, where they wash all the kukai into these two ponds, one is used to irrigate the fields, and the other one where all the poop settles at the bottom, they clean that out when need to be done, and then they plow the fields that the cows are in. Now, you know, you're talking about non-GMO corn and
non-GMO soy,
right? Soy.
Because organic milk is a premium,
right? Which is a good. The prospects of it is good, but you got to look at it from, I think, and I'm not a big businessman by any sense of the word, but it's gonna add a cost to it. Do you want to invest in all this stuff?
Yes.
Right now?
Yes.
I mean, I understand they put in $17 million in this. This is like the guy who says, well, they got to ship the milk off island to get it processed. My understanding is that the processing plant costs $2 million. Once this thing gets proven to be a going concern, I'm sure all of this stuff will be much more welcome than it is right now, because it's just adding to costs. Everybody who goes into business wants to minimize their costs. Everybody.
But what I know at a novice level, and when we do eventually have the dairy people in here, we can, you know, have somebody speaking also who's, you know, much sharper than I
sharper than me
on the other end of it. But I mean, what I always like to try and do is look for solutions.
Well, there's no problem with that. It's just that somebody's got to pick up the tab on it.
Yep. If they have to fight it for a very long time, it's the difference between perhaps being welcome in the community and having a lot of adversity. There might be a lot of win-wins. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Teddy Blake in the studio and Felicia. And this program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Historical Society.
The Kauai Historical Society and the Historic County Building will both celebrate their 100th anniversaries on Saturday, May 10th, on the lawn of the county building from 4 to 9 p.m. Live music, taiko drummers, dances from diverse cultures, popular ethnic foods, tours of the county building, and books from the Historical Society will be available. The celebration will be topped off with a performance by Daryl Gonzalez and Garrett Santos. That's Saturday, May 10th, on the lawn of the county building in Lihue from 4 to 9 p.m. More information online at kauaihistoricalsociety.org.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Aloha, you are on the air.
Hey, Hansa, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. First of all, I like that guy's introduction. He's humble. He's a pretty humble guy. But, being in a position of power.
Are you speaking of Ted?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Are you speaking of Ted?
Yeah, the gentleman speaks who's in your studio or on,
yeah,
the,
he's
on
right
the radio
here. Uh-huh.
That was talking to you?
Yes.
Yeah, the open space guy?
Yes, Ted Blake.
Okay, so, you know, Kauai is a unique one, too, because we have to reestablish the flumes for many reasons, liability, erosion, water usage for this farming endeavor that you just talked about. And, you know, the one area that children can work under the federal labor law, you know, for children's labor laws, is farming. And so, you know, that one girl was talking about these community gardens that she made and made legislation, a young girl.
Uh-huh, Talia. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I talked many times about, you know, at least mimicking the Maho farms or whatever the ones in Oahu where they use the kids.
Yes.
And, you know, really get into it where you get some of these Akamai farmers and really these children can make money. A lot of them, their families, they could use the money, right? And you can also make the program with the DOE and the schools. I know Kapa is very progressive, you know, where you get credits, if you know what I mean, where you go and you work and you go get credits.
Yep, that's right.
And so, you know, this whole beating of ping pong around is just simple to me. You know, I don't know how to do this stuff, and I wish I did. I just get good ideas. That's all it is. I need somebody else. But, you know, let's get some of these kids, especially the ones that are so bored with life that they're only smoking dope and getting pregnant, you know, and even the smart ones are bored. You know, my girl's bored. I got to come up with ways to keep her occupied. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they all want money to buy phones and this, that, apps, whatever. And we need food grown here.
I agree.
You know, and it's pretty good to have 20, 30 hours a week as a kid to work. I worked a lot when I was a kid.
Yes.
And it did build some character. And there is a disrespect hierarchy lost that could be redeemed so many ways. In one movement, you could get so many things solved. And Kauai is unique. We need to get our flumes reestablished. You know,
so the water, the flumes.
Hunters.
Mm-hmm. The flumes, you know, that is another thing that, like what Ted was just speaking to about the cost of doing things. You know, I remember about 10, 15 years ago when a lot of these awai or flumes were being retired, there was this discussion of how hard it would be to be replacing them. And it's expensive to keep them active, but it is such a big loss at the agriculture level. And even with our Kilauea Agri Park, that waterway is no longer there, and that is a big setback for those 75 acres. But
yeah.
But water is essential, and just to support what you're saying, the Kauai Farmers Union is working on updating an ag plan to offer in partnership with Kauai Planning Action Alliance for an updated ag plan. You know, there's a lot of things that have been going right, and I was really happy to see last week that the at least experimentation with hemp for bioremediation passed in our legislature, so that is okay. So it's a baby step, it's a first step, but we can start working with that. And if in the long run we're able to do quite a bit with hemp, which isn't pakalolo, it's not the medicinal kind, it's good for, hemp seed is really good for food if it's raised in an organic environment, hemp oil.
I gotta cut it on that one right there because
okay.
I disagree on the hemp issue for multiple
okay.
reasons. But one of the reasons is I've been to the mainland. I may be born and raised Kauai, but I understand that when this industry does take off, places like Missouri that already had old hemp industry that were once squashed by the lumbers, they're going to take way more land than us, and we already got a land issue. What are you going to do, too? You know, I mean, some of those people, they want to use it as bioremediation, and then they're going to burn it and make it aerosol or put it into materials to detox the west side. And, you know, Kauai itself doesn't have enough land for a mainstream hemp production. You know, I'm more of a person that's ready to go for the legalize it for tourists. you know, and go for the high-grown, best weed in the planet that Hawaii is really kind of known for. I mean, that's the one we're going to have to split on issues. I'll fight the tooth and nail against the hemp industry.
Well, you should come in sometime whenever we're talking about that. I don't claim to know all the answers. I'm working on understanding the issues.
Yeah, well, they're going to deactivate all of us. You know, for years I always laugh and said, oh, these green harvest guys, all they have to do is go and pollinate everybody. I mean, seriously, they're just going to fly with the helicopters and the pollen right on the trade winds. Boom, right in front of all, everybody pollinated.
You know,
but
Ron,
I want to say one last thing. I like what the guy said about the Oluas. You know, is that the same guy, Ted?
Yeah, he's right here. He's trying to talk to you.
Hey, well, the funny thing is, I'm going home with my two pupils, and I'm going to eat my cabbage and my kale out of my garden.
But, you know, I just wanted to comment.
Only a little while. It just kind of was funny, actually.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear, Ted?
I wanted to comment on what you said about having kids farm and stuff. My dad used to be the ag teacher at Kapaa School, Kapaa High School.
Oh, now, who was he?
Hartwell Blake.
What was the last name?
Blake. This is back before we were born, I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
But he, you know, there's some guys in school that probably weren't your ideal students. Some are football players, some just, you know, hanging around. And they never got into the kind of trouble you get into right now, but back then, it was looked at the same kind of trouble.
It was the equivalent, yeah.
And he took them. There were about eight of them. And they went up to, I guess it's fruit packers up in Kapaia. You know, they went up right across there. He got some acreage. And he started growing tomatoes with them. And they would come to work every day after school and on Saturdays. And when they started selling it, he showed them all the papers, this is the expenses, and they split the profits. And these guys, you know, I'm really proud to say that these guys are, I mean, I'll name some of them. They may get embarrassed, but Antonio Serenitman, Elia Wood, Teofilio Takbian, Richard Ebinger. I mean, these guys are
very successful.
Very pillars successful, hardworking guys, you know.
Yeah.
And that came... I like to think that some of that came from them being put in a position like this and being able to do something where they could show their friends, like, hey, you know what, look at what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you got a great idea.
I agree with that because I was also, you know, I was in six of those. I was in FFA back in Kapaa. I was Mr. Kubota.
Yeah, Future Farmers of America.
Back in Kapaa School.
So I have a scheduled caller holding for about 5 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
no
anyway,
worries.
Hey, right on. Thanks for sharing. But before you finish, I like that Alua story, and I agree. Stop targeting the big egg layers. Bye-bye.
Right on. Okay. And thank you for holding. Leona, are you on the air?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And so I actually have you as a scheduled caller. I opened the show and mentioned that we were going to talk a little bit about First Amendment rights on campus, and I briefly spoke to what is going on the UH Hilo with the students from Young Americans for Liberty chapter.
Yes.
Being asked to stop distributing copies of the Constitution, and so those people they were just at a group table in the corner at the campus Center Plaza, and so and they weren't even getting that much traffic. Anyway, they got in trouble, so they are filing a lawsuit. What was your experience? Because there's some parallels. Is that correct?
Yes, you could say that, Felicia. Our demonstration was just more, again, just what it was, a demonstration
was this
of
on
our,
Earth
of
Day?
Our First Amendment rights.
Is this Earth Day?
There was just a minor situation on Earth Day where a banner was asked to be taken down, and some students felt that it was a violation of their First Amendment mm-hmm. right to have that taken down, and so this week we got the same banner that was taken down, and we sat pretty much in front of the school, and just stood there and held the banner for about an hour. Very nonviolent, white t-shirt. We tried to make it just very non-controversial in a sense, but just wanted to prove a point, though, that, you know, our rights, we've fought so hard, you know, as Americans to have these rights. And, you know, especially myself being a minority female, I passionately feel that when I see something like that, especially on a collegiate level, that something maybe should just be demonstrated. And so that was simply what we were trying to do.
Are you comfortable? First Amendment rights. Are you comfortable telling us what was on the front of the banner?
Sure. The banner read, Dallas Syngenta Pioneer, shame on you for suing Kauai County for the right to spray poison next to hospitals, schools, and homes.
And were the police called on you, or was it relatively mild and you were just told you can't
do it?
No,
ma'am. There was no police called. It was a very peaceful demonstration. The chancellor did come out, and that was handled very professionally as well.
And what was the request? I happen to like the chancellor, but what was her request?
She respectfully asked us to take the banner down on behalf of some students there, and so I respectfully, you know, we said no, and again, as respectfully as possible, because I agree with you, Felicia, as well. I'm a big fan of my chancellor, and so doing something like that, you know, especially in a small community here, you know, you always want to make sure, again, it's always done respectfully, but that she did ask, and we did refuse. And then we just stayed for a little bit longer, and we actually, the other student and I who were there, were involved in the sustainability club that actually helped with Earth Day. And so we actually had a post-op meeting for Earth Day right then, and we kind of figured it was a time to break.
But so you guys were holding this sign, and it's, I'm guessing, maybe 2 feet by 4 feet. How big is this sign? Was it
It's a 2x4, if I'm not mistaken, Felicia. And, yes, ma'am, we were just standing and holding it up.
So when you were asked to put it away, what was the reason? I mean, like, if you were holding a sign that said Kapahai Volleyball or car washes or something like that, is it your sense that you would have been asked to put it away also? Was it simply that you're not allowed to hold a sign, or was it the content of the sign?
It was, Felicia, and I believe it was just the content of the sign. The chancellor did say that, you know, there were students who attended the campus who do work for those companies, and you know, shame is a very strong word, and I can agree with the chancellor on that, which is why we use the word on the banner, to be honest with you. But again, she had just said that, yeah, some students had kind of felt, I don't know if discriminated is the right word, but they felt that shame, and they felt like they maybe didn't need to feel that. And so I felt like she was speaking again just on behalf of students who had worked for those for the companies that were mentioned on the banner.
Teddy Blake is with me. He has something to say.
No, no. Was the sign facing towards the campus or facing the road?
I was facing towards the road.
So I'd have to drive about 5 miles an hour to read that. Huh? That's a lot of words.
Probably. It is a lot of words, and we were kind of further back on campus.
But still, it's a lot of words. I mean, if I wanted to read it, I'd have to slow down really slow. I'm just curious.
You have to pull into the drive. Yeah, have to pull into KCC, where, like, right in front of the school where we were.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, we were sitting on top of the hill, so I have really bad eyes. I wouldn't have been able to read it, but I have people in my family who have great eyes. So maybe they might have. I don't want to say that someone could or could not have been able to see it from the highway. I was trying to get it to have people to see it from the highway, to be honest with you.
So you guys came out to do it because other students were told they had to put it away. And so you were actually making a political statement on First Amendment rights.
Essentially, yes, Felicia. It was more of just, exactly, it was a statement that we have the right to demonstrate these rights, especially on a at a collegiate level university or campus here. I mean, this is the epicenter for rights and the demonstration of rights. And that really, you summed it up very well.
Have you followed what is happening at UH Halo about them distributing the U.S. Constitution? Like, that to me is a rougher one to get. Why would the university feel threatened by the U.S. Constitution, which is what we're supposed to be conditioned to believe is the best document? And why is the U.S. Constitution, when it's not, you have to put your reading glasses on if you're older to look at that little pamphlet that's about 3 inches by 4 inches. Do you know why? What was the problem there?
You know, Felicia, I have no idea. I've been following the UH Halo lawsuit. I know just some of the facts surrounding it. I don't know why that would be an issue at any point, especially if it's a U.S. Constitution. I know numerous other campuses around our nation that celebrate Constitution Day by passing out constitutions, by hosting debates, by demonstrating throughout their different campuses. And so it was a little appalling to see that in the newspaper. I will have to say that. And then it happened so ironically quickly between our events. It was just kind of, it just felt right doing it yesterday.
Let me ask you something. Do you think maybe, as the guys who work for Syngenta and Pioneer here were feeling a little targeted, you think, and Hilo, that maybe the sovereignty guys are feeling a little targeted?
You know what? Absolutely. And that, I mean, I don't know, for the Constitution, with the banner, it's not supposed to target per se, but it kind of is. I mean, it's public knowledge that these companies are in lawsuit, and so it just kind of brings it to light from a different perspective. As far as the constitutions, I mean, I can absolutely see where you're coming from with the sovereign issue. But still, I mean, sovereignty or not, I mean, everyone still has the right to be able to pass out, and you can choose to not accept the little constitutions or not.
Leona, are you able to stand out of the wind? And I have a caller who wants to come on the air with you to speak to you, okay?
Yeah.
Aloha, caller. You are both on here.
Yes.
I want to congratulate you and the other students who stood out there with your sign, saying shame on the petrochemical firms, the sea companies like Syngenta and Dow. I think you guys have a right to express your opinion at any college or junior college or community college. Intellectual freedom, academic freedom is paramount. And it's very important that different viewpoints and ideas are expressed. And you had every right to do that. And I know maybe you're saying that you guys respect the chancellor, but as far as I'm concerned, he did the wrong thing for coming out even discussing with you about that. You have a right to do that. Even if there are students that work from say, for example, if people want to demonstrate against the U.S. military, you know, just because a school is getting contracts from the U.S. military doesn't mean that students can't express their opinions about militarism and war and drones and other things like that. So I congratulate you for what you're doing. And what you did was perfectly all right in my book. And if I know you guys are going to have a sign holding, I live in Puhi, I'll come out and join you.
Thank you so much for your support. I really, really appreciate it. And I agree. I mean, anyone, whatever the topic, regardless of how anyone personally feels or if they feel offended, they should be able to discuss that. 100%. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Leona, I have a question.
Yes.
You might have said it, and I missed the answer. Did any student, yourself or any of the others, get any kind of reprimand that is impacting, like you're going to not be able to stay at the school, or you're going to get a bad grade, or you're going to get this or that or anything, or was it just please put it away?
That, yeah, there was nothing like that going on, Felicia. Again, the chancellor was extremely respectful when she asked us. Yeah, there's been nothing like that going on. There's been no reprimand. They allowed us to do our demonstration, and I hope that in the future when we demonstrate again that it will go the same route, you know, very, you know, peaceful.
Well, thank you. I know the student government has done some great symposiums. I went to one on global warming, or I think we call it climate change and potential ocean rise. There's been many, many good programs that have been brought out that I've enjoyed over the years, and those often happen around Earth Day. So I really appreciate the consciousness of the students. And are you involved in the voter registration drive?
There's a couple of voter registration things that I've been involved with, so I'm not, is that?
Well, just with voter registration, like I've actually been registering to vote over the years. Very often I will have a table somewhere, or
you're talking about on campus.
It could be on campus. I'm just trying to see, like, if people want to vote.
Yes.
Like, I know, yes. I just, on the beach the other day, just walked down and registered 42 people, many of whom were born and raised here, some older than me. I think that there, and many of them is the first time, not all of them, but probably half the people, it was their first time registering to vote. I think that there are many people who are what I would call disaffected voters, or they will tell me, you know, when you vote, you're essentially giving your consent to be governed. And if you don't like any of the options, sometimes that doesn't feel very good. Or I run into people who have nationhood conflict, you know, because if they register to vote, well, then are they saying they're not a Hawaiian national? There's a lot of reasons that people don't register to vote. But I've been really warmed to see how many people are feeling motivated to participate. And I wondered if voter registration was going on the campus, if young people, you're in your early 20s, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
So if people in your age group, when you're around on campus, are most people paying attention, or are most people a little indifferent?
Well, you know, Felicia, that's something that actually I know next semester we've rallied actually a couple really, really great individuals who are, you know, just as stoked on this movement that's kind of happening throughout America, definitely here on this island. And I definitely next semester we're going to be pushing, and I'm personally going to put it on my agenda to try and have a voter registration table here at all times on campus during school hours. And I don't know if we'll be able to work something out with our student government volunteers that way. Like I said, it's just kind of an idea, but I think that's a necessity.
Because the reason I was asking, if people are threatened by giving out the Constitution or just having a simple sign, I would think maybe they might find voter registration threatening too, because voter registration is one of the most powerful things that can be put into place.
And very, very true. I mean, I think just bringing an awareness and allowing students the opportunity to either get educated on issues, or like you said earlier, Felicia, you know, if people don't want to get registered to vote, that's their, you know, MO, or maybe their personal things. But I definitely just want to make sure that there is an option for people who do want to, or who may have that potential or that interest, and just don't know the right channels or the right route to go down to get registered, because it's very easy. You and I both know that. And it's just, yeah, we can definitely be utilizing the school as an epicenter for this just awareness movement.
Yeah, and I think young people, it's like the most important of any age group for you to vote, because the choices that happen now will impact you for the longest time, and it really does make the difference of whether The economic environment here is something that can embrace you and allow you to continue living here, or different elements that squeeze us off and out into the corners. So engagement is important, and these permanent absentee ballots are really a great thing, because it does something kind of like the KIUC ballot, where it will come to your home address or your mailing address, and then you can take the time to really research the candidates and the different ballot initiatives that are on there. You can study it and take a few days to really think about it and then vote. I tend to like to go to the polls personally, but also when people have the permanent absentee ballot, it keeps, it suppresses the problem of maybe you're sick that day, maybe you got to work that day, you're going to a wedding on another island. You know, you're a lot more likely to have your vote count, and we all count. So thank you for the effort that you're doing. Do you have any final thoughts?
You know, I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me today, Felicia. Love KKCR. And just want to tell everyone, you know, if you're not registered to vote, it's extremely easy. The DMV can get you registered. Come on to KCC. My name is Leona Thompson. Ask for me. I will be happy to get anyone a voter registration pamphlet. Mm-hmm.
And they're floating around all over the place. Like, I have them in my car. Many people have them in their car.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
you can even do it online.
I just really want to push that, Felicia. Just push the vote. And again, just making sure that as individuals, and especially if there's any students listening right now, you know, you have the right to demonstrate your rights at any point, and never be scared to do that. I just want to tell people that. Never fear. No one can hurt you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Felicia.
Take care.
Okay, take care.
And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284, Holly, Eva. We have another caller holding. Oops, looks like he hung up. He might call back. One of his main points that he wanted to share was that he was in agreement with our earlier caller from Kapahi, that he was concerned about large-scale hemp growing, and that there could be quite a number of problems with that. I've had, over the months, the past year, you know, a regular peppering of people with that concern. And I just know when I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, okay, well, what alternatives do we have? There's a lot to be said for small-scale agriculture. But also many people seem to be dependent on the large-scale agriculture. I realize monocropping is very difficult on the environment. And, you know, we need to be working our way away from that. But there is also some value in the large-scale, business of doing it. And hemp might be something that is not damaging. But hopefully we will hear from this person. You are listening to Kauai Soapbox Live. This is Felicia with Teddy Blake. And this program is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with Bali High Realty, Anahola Stringed Instruments, Aya's Garden, and Al Pastor Tacos.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Haleiwa.
Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, and Hanalei, serving Kauai since 1978, providing personalized real estate sales and rental services. Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, also supports KKCR and the Kauai Independent Food Bank. More information at balihigh.com or by calling 826-7244.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored designs and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos, and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And all of those underwriters really help us out. We're going to have a fun drive coming up very soon. Aloha, caller. You are on the air. Thank you for holding.
Thank you. The question I have is for Ted. Ted, I'm a grandmother, and I have two grandchildren in school. I wanted to know, do you have any children in school or grandchildren?
I have two grandchildren in school.
Okay. My concern, Ted, so you understand where I'm coming from, is the milk that's going to be produced on the island will eventually get into the school system because of the economics of not having it brought in from Oahu. And if 30% of the feed that is going to be fed to those cattle are corn from the genetically engineered people, my concern is those children are going to be exposed to something that they have no idea what might happen to their health. And would you not be concerned about that aspect?
I think every parent, every grandparent would be concerned. Let me finish.
Yeah, go ahead.
They'll be concerned to a degree on what their children ingest. What I'm looking at is, our milk comes right now from the mainland. It doesn't come from Oahu.
Okay.
It comes from the mainland, and God knows what's in that milk. I think the milk that will be produced here would probably be less, have less GMO-related feed because it's going to be more grass-fed than they're going to be grain-fed. It's fresh milk, and it's just, it makes a difference, especially on when you're in the most isolated islands in the world. Have you been here? Were you here in the 50s?
I've been here over 30 years, almost 40 years.
So not in the 50s, though?
No.
So you've never experienced a shipping strike here?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I remember going into a restaurant where we ran out of everything. You wanted to use the bathroom, you had to go put a deposit with the cashier to get toilet paper to go use the bathroom. And if you didn't come back with the toilet paper, you lose your deposit. We also had shortages on sugar. But we never had any shortage on the milk because we had milk then. We had Waimea Dairy, we had Soke Dairy. And I know in Koloa, back before these dairies, we had three dairies in Koloa. And you know, it's... I mean, I could find fault with everything, but
we're not talking about everything, Ted. We're talking
I understand.
What I'm saying for, and that's
what
something
I'm saying,
that you're thinking about and that you're maybe supporting. And I'm just saying, once it gets into the food chain in our schools and our children, how do you take it out?
GMO. I would believe that GMO is already in the food chain in schools.
But we got to get it out.
I believe that it
should be there, and we should help contribute to it. And a little bit of GMO versus maybe not a lot of GMO, it's still poison, whatever way you want to look at it.
Exactly. But, I mean, unfortunately, things like this don't happen overnight.
Well, caller, let me ask you a question. If there was no GMO food in the cattle's diet, if it was organic, would you have a different feeling about the dairy, or would you still have a lot of challenges with it?
No, I'd have a different feeling about it, of course.
So that's your main issue?
That's my main issue.
It's kind of my main issue, too. And
yeah.
So what I'm hopeful when those people really come on is that seems like they can jump that gap and not create a product that people don't want. They can have a product that people do want. And then it seems like there might be a few other elements that they could do to help correct the situation. But for you, if the milk was what you felt like as beneficial or nutritious, it would change your opinion.
Absolutely.
What do you think to that, Ted?
Well, it's sound. I agree with it, but does your children drink milk now?
Well, the school provides it for them.
No. Do they drink milk at home now?
No, because they don't live with me.
So do they drink milk at home, do you know?
Occasionally, yes.
They might drink organic milk.
Yes,
drink organic milk and eat organic cheeses. 3 or 4 years ago, before all these callers called in and having all these scientists on the air, before that, I just eat cheese. But now I eat organic cheese because I have done the homework.
Yes.
And I feel guilty as a parent that I didn't.
We have our own garden, organic garden, and they've been around us for so many years. When they do spend time with us, they've also taken and everything they try to eat, a big percentage is organic because they understand. I show them films, I educate them, and they're very much for just having organic things in their diet as much as possible. So yes, they're educated, they're aware. And I want to keep them healthy. But this would be a real challenge if I knew that was going to happen and that the dairy industry, because they're cutting corners or want to save money, would buy feed from something that's already in question on the West Side and something that could get into the food chain. I would question their ethics, that they have no compassion for the children. Now, adults, they take their own responsibility, but the children have no choice, especially with the DOA, which Felicia knows that they have their budgets and they have to buy from sources that are available for the best price. So, yeah, I think if you have anything, Ted, that you might consider keeping that in mind and being aware of that.
I commend you for educating your children or grandchildren, whatever it is. It's a process that takes time. Not everybody's interested in it, much less children. And to get children to be interested in it is wonderful. I think you've done a great job.
Well, thank you.
It's just that I'm not a black and white type of guy. I mean, nothing in the world happens black and white. You know, there's the change is not going to happen immediately. It's going to be a gradual change.
What change are you referring to? How so?
We've talked to the dairy guys about GMO free grain. And that's a possibility, but I'm going to let them talk about that because I don't know enough of the details about it for them to talk about.
They could come in and do it, and I think, though, that what they can get, if any of them are listening to this show, changing that aspect would probably take, I'm sure there's a third that would never be happy and a third that are going to be happy regardless, but there's a very important middle third there, and probably shifting to non-GMO food and a little bit more organic practices on the land, a little bit more yummy practices on the land, and then they're not going to have a problem. And I think in the long run that's cheaper. Caller, thank you so much for calling. I've got a lineup of calls.
I understand. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you, Ted.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Felicia.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. Oops. All right. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Oh, is that me already?
Yes.
Hi. This is Marge calling, and I have a real quick report of the KIUC board meeting that I attended today, if you're interested.
Yes, and then I'm going to probably make you make it quick because I'm expecting a scheduled caller any minute.
Okay, and I particularly like your guest. I don't know who he is.
Teddy Blake.
Oh, well, thank you. I like his point of view because I like people on your show that have been born and raised here. They have an excellent point of view, and thank you, sir, for speaking up. Okay, today at the board meeting, a couple of things. I had reported from the last board meeting that 900 solar panels had been damaged in the Kaloa solar project, and I got the skinny on that today. because I was concerned about that because they got damaged from a high wind. And my concern was that if there was a hurricane force wind, what would have happened to those panels or anybody's panels? So I was informed that the panels were just held down by one bolt. They were not permanently adhered and to the framework. So that's why 900 of them blew off. And that the contractor is responsible financially.
So where is...
is responsible for those and the price of the repair and or replacement and the labor. So no charge to KIUC members.
March?
Yes.
We did just get a test from the emergency broadcast system right in what you were speaking there. And just for the listeners, I just want to say KKCR, that's part of what even has us here and why we're on the North Shore. When people say, why is it North Shore? And Marge is one of the people who set this station up. And this happened after Hurricane Iniki to keep us safe. So the North Shore won't be cut out again like it was during Iniki. Marge, what you missed when you were speaking and you got cut off.
Oh,
where exactly are those 900 panels?
Well, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know the exact location. They showed an aerial view of it today in the CEO's report. It's somewhere in, it says Kalua.
Is this KIUC's project?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's right next to the Kalua Mill.
Oh, okay.
The sugar mill. It's on the way to the mill. It's a huge project.
It's a huge project, like one of the largest in the country.
Yeah.
Yes. It's very large. And so, anyway, that was good news to know that they will survive 125 miles per hour wind in a hurricane. So, they won't be blown away, and we hopefully will have power the next day. After.
And they didn't crack in the wind?
Yes, they were damaged.
Oh, okay. It's really hard to fix them.
Was mostly... not the fault of the panels. It was the contractor had not bolted them all yet completely because they were just installing them. So that was what the problem was with the high wind that blew them off. Anyway, so that. Now, the other thing that members should know is that there are some board members who do want to change the requirements for becoming an applicant to the board of directors. And the current policy number 18 defines what the requirements are, but it came up in the meeting today that policy should be really examined because I think they had some problems, some board members had some problems with some of the applicants in the last couple years that they felt were not really qualified or competent. And so I just want to alert people that this is going to probably be discussed at the next meeting in May.
Okay, and what that is Tuesday?
That's a Tuesday, and it's a different date than usual. It's May 27th.
Okay, because that's an important point, and I do have my caller holding that is the scheduled caller, so we'll be quick, but like that's really important to me because there's a lot of effort to undermine the democratic process, and it's the same person on the board of KIUC who brought up this thing where they want the next time people do a citizens initiative that they have to get a much, much higher amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they say, we don't even want to entertain a certain generation or people who aren't really from our background or, you know, whatever, that they determine, they look at a group of people and say, you are unqualified, we are qualified, you are unqualified, you can't even come onto the board.
Right, and this is extremely important. And so it's going to come up for a review this month by the committee, and then it will be discussed at the May 27th meeting. And quickly, I do want to commend CEO David Bissell. He is making a very large effort to get to communicate to members exactly what is being done at KIUC and the accomplishments and some of the problems. He had a 20-minute PowerPoint talk
excellent.
This morning.
Mm-hmm.
So this is excellent. This is something new. It happened at the last board meeting. It happened today, and I congratulated him because that's been one of my complaints about the way the co-op runs is that there's not enough communication with what's going on. So I think that he is listening and to the members and making an effort to really communicate what's going on. Also, the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer, Melissa, she is putting out now printed reports, monthly reports of the finances, and so I can bring that home and look at it and evaluate it and see what if any discrepancy. So just a report. KRUC, I think, is doing a lot to try to improve their attitude as being a cooperative.
And I'm happy to hear that. And the same board member on KIUC who wants to make it very difficult for people to have ballot initiatives at KIUC wants to change the charter because he is also on the charter amendment. I am not going to mention his name. I would do it if I called him ahead of time and I would have him call in and comment. I actually like the individual. But I'm very disappointed to see on the front page of the paper today wanting to quadruple the number of signatures to petition the vote. You know, that's another way of suppressing the people's right to participate in the system. And so I got the next caller. He is running for office in District 14, and I'll pull him into that conversation after he is able to really introduce himself. But thank you very much, Marge, for going and sharing that story.
You bet. Thanks for your program, as always.
All right. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia on Kauai Soapbox. Teddy Blake's in the studio with me. And now I have Jonathan Ho'omanuanui on the phone with us, and he is running for District 14 on the Republican ticket. The incumbent is Derek Kawakami. Jonathan, tell us about yourself.
Yes, my name is Jonathan Ho'omanuanui, and yes, I am running for the House Representative District 14. And that includes the Wailua House lots, the Kapa'a, Kapahi, Kealia, Anahola, Moloa, Kilauea, Taliwai, Princeville, Hanalei, Waipa, Wainiha, and Haena. Aloha. And the reason why I'm running for this position is because I want to reform the education system. Also, talk about the GMO and protect businesses and farming and help the homeless and try to take on some of the Hawaiian issues that we have. So thank you very much, Felicia, for having me today. I'm very honored to be on this radio station.
Okay. And Ted, do you have any questions for Jonathan? Do you guys know each other? You must know his mother, Honey Girl.
Jonathan, just what is your main concern and with reference to the Hawaiian rights, Hawaiian culture, et cetera, that you have?
Hawaiian rights and Hawaiian culture. Well, it's a whole conglomerate of things. I mean, we're going to be talking about, I noticed that the North Shore is the only GMO. I've seen a lot of signs. I mean, so I believe that, I need to kind of reach out to those people and hopefully they can call in and ask me questions. And also, when we talk about Hawaiian burial sites and things like that, what we want to do is respect the culture of our ancestors who were buried on this aina here. So go ahead.
Let me just throw one out, and you may not. I mean, this is off the cuff, so
that's okay.
if you don't have an answer, I can totally understand it. What do you think about the big corporations that control water in Hawaii?
Oh, big corporations that are controlling water in Hawaii. Well, first of all, I know that we are the wettest spot in the world. I know we receive more water here. When I think about water and control, the thing that I disagree with, I don't mind the control. It's just that how are we going to control? That's my question. I mean, are we going to raise prices on the peoples of Kauai, or what angle are we taking? That is my biggest question. You talk about controlling water. I mean, one of them is going to lead me right into the pesticides. I know, I understand business perspectives. I also understand the people's perspective. I believe that the West Side, because they need to be employed, now I'm going to get off the subject a little bit, but I'm going to come right back to the water issue. And I believe it's affecting the West Side also. I believe that these people are employed by this big business and corporations to work, and they got to survive. They got to make money. They got to feed their families. That is all understood. I believe North Shore in the District of 14 they have a concern of that being spread on this side of the island. So I understand the people's perspectives and stuff like that. So, but as far as controlling water, I believe that because we have agricultural potential, because we have farming, is a very, I think, how many, what's the percentage of farming and agricultural lands in Kauai? I take a wild guess, maybe 90%. But we need water for those agricultural lands to survive, yeah? And one of the things that I want to introduce or talk on is about what happens to the pesticides as they go down and hit the water table. That's going to be the big question. Do or are we going to have consequences further down the road? For example, it could be 3 years down the road. Maybe take 5 years to reach the water table.
It takes between 20 and 30 years, and they are reaching it. You know, there is plenty that is in the water table. This is stuff from, it's not the most modern of what's going on, but certainly atrazine is being found in there and a number of other chemicals at very small amounts, but it is in there.
My question wasn't as deep as you're getting. It's more, water in Hawaii wasn't owned by anybody. Even the king understood water belonged to the people. Mm-hmm. When somebody comes and diverts water and takes water out of a stream, it affects the environment and the ecology of the stream downstream.
Exactly.
It's also affected some local Ia that can't get any water. And I mean, our ancestors knew pretty much about sustainability with this non-carbon footprint local Ia that we had.
And the Limukohu really do need the fresh water.
Limukohu needs fresh water.
Okay, yeah, and you know, I fall right in that category. My family owns a property up in Waianae. And not to say anything bad, not to mention names about anybody, but the water was diverted.
Right.
So we didn't have water to do our kalo anymore and raise the taro. But like you said, in the older days, the water came down. It was naturally, I mean, when you take away the natural flow, yeah, and water is very, very, very tricky. When you take away the natural flow, you know, I want to get more deep into this. You take away the life of the land. But if you take away the natural flow, what happens is the water backs up. And then where it has to go somewhere. I mean, then I believe we had an incident that happened in Kilauea here a couple years back where a dam broke. And the
Koloko
water came
dam.
Down. I don't know nothing about the dam or where it's located or anything like that, but I did hear the news, though.
Well, 7 people died, and that was because these earthen dams are no longer being managed at the level that they were. And when people like Jack Gushigan, who worked for Kilauea Sugar, was managing them, there was actually many people watching after them all the time. And now these work like reservoirs that are just a feature in a gentleman's estate. And so there might be 7 or 8 properties that abut against it. In that one, it was in one person's property. But, you know, it is so long since those waters flowed naturally that people don't even know. There's a building placed in the wrong place.
Exactly.
7 people died. It was tragic.
Yes, yes. And I understand that. So, yeah, getting back to the water issue, and I feel for you because I'm a local-born boy. Although the newspaper put me out to be a Oahu native, it doesn't matter. I'm Hawaii native.
Well, I want to say that I actually know your genealogy a bit, and you've got some pretty impressive ancestors, and like John Hanohanopa. Ho'ohanahanopa.
Yeah.
He came out of
Kalalau,
and his mother really is the one who restored the heiau there at Ka, and she wrote many songs, and she was a kumuhula. So, I mean, in your upline, you have everyone from Sugar to, you know, the Ali'i. So you're a little prince, actually.
Yes, and my grandfather came out of there, and the mother was the one that's very instrumental. She has 700 compilations. She's ranked 4th or 5th degree, actually the highest in chance. Right now it's in the museum in Honolulu, Bishop Museum. I did get copies of that. But we already knew what sustainability was. And what I would like to see is Kauai to be self-sustaining. I mean, that's the big thing is we can be self-sustaining. We've got ways to make this island self-sustaining. So I really want to make sure that our water table doesn't get affected. And I tell you this, because you say 20 years, I believe. And in 20 years, well, I'm going to be what? In 20 years, I'm going to be 7 years old if I get to go that far. Only God can tell which way I'm going to go. But anyway, I just, yeah, I'm all about protecting the environment, limiting that. If West Side does not affect our side, I should care. I do care about the whole entire Hawaii, but I mean, it's a business perspective on that side of the island because the people on that side need these jobs. And there's no jobs here. I mean, we can walk right into the homeless situation. I mean, if these farms need workers, why don't they take these homeless people and work them? I mean, the old days, I believe, on the Robinson side, Keith Dyson and their grandparents were great friends, very good friends with John Hanahanapa, who was very instrumental in the development of Kauai. But see, when we talk about that, see, the same theory can be used. I mean, you got, what's that camp down there that they use? I was just down there the other day with Uncle Hoa.
On the west side?
Ho'onalani, yes. I was down there with the Kanaheles and the Kauhelali family and you name it. I went to visit those camps, the Kamakani camps and
yes.
Things like that. They had the right theory going on. I mean, they housed the people. And they put them to work.
So I have a few questions for you on that, because the ag issues are really huge. And oftentimes what I think really comes into it, frankly, is a little bit of an ethnic element. Now the people who work the fields very often are young and white. And so I think in some ways there's an effort to really suppress farm worker housing because of who is in the thing. That's just my opinion. But I know also that there's suppression because it is easier to, if you build decent farm worker housing, then pretty soon it turns into vacation rentals. So they don't want that shift to happen. I think there's a lot of potential to be doing small-scale farm worker housing. I'm actually working on that, how we can have a program for that is sanctioned. I would like to know, what are your opinions on kind of home rule? We are having intensive efforts to encroach the island's rights, the county rights. Everything is getting, subverted to the state and the federal government. And it really, really matters to me. What is your opinion on protecting the rights of the individual islands? The counties are really, really having to work hard to fight for it. And more than the county governments, the people in the counties are having to just twist the arms of the county governments to protect the right of the people. And you have some Hawaiian bloodline in you. How do you feel about nationhood? Where do you see that issue? I know you're running on the Republican ticket. Where do you see a nation within a nation? Where are you going on the sovereignty piece?
Right now, it's not about the red and the blue. I hate to categorize myself or any individual in a category and separation, because that's what happens with segregation. See, we become one-sided, not to say we all do that, but per se, that we have a way of thinking. So let's just get real simple on this. My father was a Democrat, my mama was a Democrat, and everything like that. I heard this guy tell me that, so he's a Democrat. Then I heard a Republican. My father, my grandparents were all Republican. You know what? We're done with that. I mean, we need to look at the future now. I mean, we need to look at sustainability. When it comes to, I know you mentioned things about housing. We were talking about how do I feel about those low-managing houses and they're turning into vacation rentals and all of this. You know, from a business perspective, if that is growth, then it's going to be growth, because whoever sits in those leadership positions, because it takes a collective effort from all, I mean, these elected officials. It's not one elected official that's going to make the decision. But however, if the lobbyist is just going to sit back and ride and then get somebody inside there with diverse knowledge and cultures to bring it to the table so that we can really lay out the research, we can really lay out the statistics. What happened on other islands? What happened in the States? What happened here in this country? And bring all that to the mm-hmm. table so we can kind of find ourselves. So let's just talk about, I know yeah. I'm divided. I feel divided, which I shouldn't, because the people shouldn't be divided. I come from a Hawaiian a background. I know what sustainability is. We only take the OPE if it's big. If it's little, we leave it on a rock. Somebody told me the other day. But so all of this is included in my thoughts. However, when we think about business perspectives, we think about land, lucrative assets, and making the fast money or making the bucks. But then everybody else that has a feeling of, you know what, Aina, we need to take care of Aina, we need to take care of water. I know there's a division. So we need to find that compromise, yeah?
Yeah.
And right now, I don't have all the answers to that because it takes time. But I believe I will always shoot to the leadership. Just like education, if the leadership is not restored and the principal is like a puppet, then why pay him all that large amounts of money when it can go down to what? The teachers who are the first line of defense of our children becoming great citizens of the society.
And Jonathan, Jonathan Ho'omanawanui, am I saying your name right? I've had a whole bunch of your little cousins
you're saying
as students,
it correct.
Right? Okay. I noticed some people say it slightly different.
Yeah.
And when the listener, Jonathan and I don't know each other very well, but I'm pretty good friends with his mother. That's why I know so much about you. She talks about you all the time. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia Kauai Soapbox with Jonathan Ho'omanawanui, candidate for representative for District 14, North Shore East Side. Jonathan, I'm going to bring another caller on who's been holding for a long time. She wants to make an announcement, then I want to ask you a few more questions. So do you have a moment to be patient?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Aloha. You've been holding a long time.
Yes, aloha, Felicia. This is Rick. I'm Camille's husband.
Okay.
And I want to thank you and Jonathan for the discussion we're having. Very important and very informative, so thank you both so very much. And we are calling in about a completely different topic, which is the Kauai Writers Conference that is happening on May 24th and 25th here on Kauai. And it's to support Kauai writers. There's a lot of writers here on Kauai, and it's going to focus on developing craft, as well as how to get published. There's going to be a literary agent there from New York and a writer and editor from the Bay of San Francisco area, as well as a self-publishing guru, Tom Corson Knowles, who's here on Hawaii, and our very own Jill Marie Landis, who is also a well-published writer here and who makes her home on the North Shore.
Where is this at?
I'm sorry?
Where is the Kauai Writers Conference going to be held at?
It's going to be at the Marriott Courtyard in Kapa'a.
And is there a website or anything like that where people can...
It's really easy. The website is KauaiWritersConference.com. And that'll tell people everything they need to know and how to get registered and some of the other specific offerings. It's 2 days jam-packed full of informative and fun information.
And how many attendees is there room for?
Actually, there's plenty of room. And we've got about 40 people attending, and there's still a month left for people to register. The sooner they register, the happier they're going to be in terms of, I'm not sure what I can talk about.
You can't talk about price. You can say that there is a fee and that they can find that out there. Is there a phone number that they can call?
Oh, you know, there is. I'm so sorry. I don't have that off the top of my head.
Not everybody is a computer person. And
right.
So, like, when you have these 40 attendees, are they mostly Kauai people, or is this something people are coming from around the island?
Presently, it is mostly Kauai, but people registered from other islands as well as other places in the U.S.
Okay, so... thank you for that. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to find a phone number.
Yeah.
And then, okay, what's the number?
Okay, the number is 808
888-639-4638. Yes, that's Dave
Rosenberg.
Okay. All right, and do you have a final thought? And then I'm going to get back to Jonathan, but it's really wonderful that there is so many nice programs like this happening around the island that enrich us, and it's part of what makes, you know, Kauai's heart beat.
Yes, thank you. And we're super excited about being able to put it on and that there are such gifted people who are going to be here helping Kauai writers develop their craft and helping them know how to get published. So we're really looking forward to it and hoping people are going to join us. So thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much. Aloha. Okay.
Blessings to you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay, Jonathan, I have, you know, I'm actually really involved in watching what's going on in the state. So I'm
going to
hear some of my mana'o here.
I'm glad, yeah.
Something that concerns me of both parties, like paying attention for some of these global trade agreements, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, this is a much bigger issue for people that are in the U.S. House than the State House. But I think elements like that are very, very important to be able to be making good judgments. We have a lot of properties being bought up by China. I'm not dissing on China, but I know from the Hotel Workers Association, they're kind of alarmed as these very large buildings are being bought in Oahu with no intention of it still being in the visitor industry. So it's alarming for the people who work in that industry. But we're not even talking about that. We're not talking about what is the transition in our economy and which direction are we going. So I think that's important. Have you looked at the Trans-Pacific Partnership at all?
No, I didn't. But you know what? I'm looking at it right now.
Do your homework. Most of the people aren't paying attention to that, and that came about at this Asia-Pacific Economic Conference that happened in Honolulu a couple years back with President Barack Obama.
Yes.
And our regular House wasn't even informed, at House and Senate at the U.S. congressional level, and it's just now coming out, and there's a fast-track effort so there could be no amendments. And these things will make a tremendous impact in our state. And so I want to be seeing people who are looking with a weather eye. I think of, like, when we have a storm coming, we know to look to the northeast. I want to see representatives who are paying attention to what storms are blowing our way, because we need to keep our individual sovereignty here. We need to keep Hawaii for all of us who live, you know, in Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah. Just taking a look at these Trans-Pacific Partnership countries, yeah, it's supposed to critically create jobs and promoting growth, providing opportunity for our citizens and contributing to the regional integration and the strengthening of the multicultural trading system. So, yes, I mean, we need to take a look at this, exactly.
And
but how is this going to affect us?
Huge, huge.
Huge.
What the Trans-Pacific Partnership does is it's like a supranational partnership. It is a global trade agreement.
Right.
It's like NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, on steroids.
Uh-huh.
It says it doesn't matter what national governments say. So, like, for example, this is sort of a precursor to it, but when there is a resource, like there's gold in Costa Rica, and there are mining companies who are suing Costa Rican country for the loss of revenue if they deny them the opportunity to come in and mine their gold underneath Costa Rica's rainforest. It's like global extortion.
Wow.
There is huge, huge issues.
It is bigger
happening
than we think it is.
It is enormous. And so many people in our elected government are looking right under their kuleana level. They're looking at county level roads and parks and garbage and, you know, some land use planning issues. But it's important also to be looking at your upline, going, what's coming down the pike? What is the global trend in all these derivatives, all these elements? And that's what we saw happening with KIUC. Those FERC permits were purchased to create energy derivatives from United Bank of Switzerland, you know, and so people aren't looking for those kind of things. We need right. to be keeping a weather eye on it. And it can devastate everything about this state. It could really, really pull it away. Not only, I mean, it's been pulled away from the Kanaka Maoli. I say that with complete respect to the two men I'm speaking with.
Right.
But we're all in the same boat. Russell Means, the Lakota activist, you know, freedom fighter, he said, welcome to the reservation, meaning to all of the people who are called Americans, because yeah. we are all losing our rights really profoundly. And these right. are global things, our National Defense Authorization Act, our Food Safety Modernization Act. We're seeing this stuff with fracking. I know you spent some time in Colorado and Nevada. Uh-huh. You were in the service. I read your website. There is a lot of issues like that. Fracking is a really excellent example, and we're having some issues with that on the Big Island when we're running these cables underneath the ocean from the volcano over to Oahu. Is that fair? It's kind of like what was Ted was saying about the water from one Ahupua'a to another. So there's right. so many issues that we really need to be looking at. Everything from that to the Aloloa, these trails that bring us down to the waterways. And yes, I respect that I'm a Malahini. I have only lived here 30 years. But I've been here long enough to inhale the culture to where it does feel like my Aina too. And I want to be able to get to the beach. I want to know that other people who want to get to the mountains can get there. It keeps all of us healthy. And so, anyway, I just kind of took your space a little bit and talking about things. But what are your thoughts on that?
And that's the kind of things that this is where we do research, yeah. And every time we get a topic or anything that is presented to become placed on the agendas, yeah, just a real small aspect of it. A lot of times we as leadership should be taking a look at these, and like you, you informed me of the United States Trade Representative thing, and I'm looking at them, and I'm looking at the enforcement and how it's going to affect us, the U.S. trade rights and benefits under international agreements. I mean, everything is happening way above us, but it's going to trickle down, because as we said in the Army, you know, poop rolls downhill. It's exactly what it means. I mean, so look, we're talking about American workers, farmers, ranchers, and businesses will receive maximum benefits. See, when I look at these things, and I see these things that come up, for example, the enforcement, and it's going to help with the farmers and ranchers, there always has to have a motive. There has to be one. We don't make decisions unless we can forecast and see down the road what's going to be either lucrative or what's going to be consequential or damaging to our Aina. And to bring it at the smaller level, I understand everything you're saying. And this is a great topic and the thing that you introduced to me now that I can go on and read these kind of things. I kind of had my focus on what my district needs and what do people want in the district. I'm focusing on the small, but, however, I can also focus on the giant picture, too. So when needed, I can do that.
So I have a caller on hold who wants to ask you a question.
No problem.
Aloha. Lisa. Thank you for being patient. You're on the air with me and Jonathan Ho'omanu'i and Teddy
Blake.
Like
Jonathan a question.
Okay.
What do you propose as a solution for the summer traffic jam from Foodland and Princeville down to the end of KA Beach? You know, that's getting ridiculous for people. It's, every summer it gets worse and worse.
I know. You're exactly right. I'm sorry. You are hitting it on the nose, because even I got to leave them 2.5 hours prior to get to the county building.
Yeah.
And I live in Kilauea. Here's my proposed thing about this whole
idea.
There's
local families down there that get land, and they've been shut down by the powers that be, you know, because of liability or because it's protected botanical area or something like that. You know, they used to be able to make a good living, you know.
I understand.
Tunnels, and they like park, and the car is watched, and it was all Pono, but I guess some Hallies get pissed off about it, and, you know.
So, we're all locals.
I heard Mayor Cavalio say, oh, well, we're going to have all the tourists park at the top, and then they get on a bus, go out there. You know, I heard, but, I don't know.
Those would be solutions. Caller, let's let Jonathan answer.
And we can improve on those kind of solutions, but we're talking about traffic and roadways, yeah? And one of my ideas, to propose this is because what we're going to have to do, something needs to be done because I understand that, you know, they want new homes here. They want to build new, you know, homesteads or whatever at Princeville.
They get homes here they're not even living in.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
For real.
Yes.
It's just ridiculous. It's just like paradise is lost, bro. It's just kind of.
I know. And so what we want to do is, see, if we can eliminate going through Kapaa. That back road, man, I got stalled over there an hour and a half going to work one day. And every time I call in, I talk to my friend Thomas and say, hey, brother, I'm going to be late. No worries. but that's not the point. The point is this. The point is there's a road that the Army used to use, the military used to use. If we can turn around and get it. See, I know the people are gonna half gonna say yes, half gonna say no, because it's culture. Half is gonna say this. What's gonna happen to us in the future?
Where's that road?
We're gonna kill ourselves. Go ahead.
Where's that road? Is this the east side though? The caller was asking. Foodland to Hyena.
From like Princeville down to Hyena.
Oh, that's what you want, from Princeville down to Hyena.
Every summer it's just like traffic jam, you know.
I know.
It's not how it should be. And, you know, the mayor's been trying to bring up solutions. And, you know, you're running for that area, right? You represent Hyena to Kapaa
exactly.
or something?
Yeah. And with good explanations from the leadership, from an elective official, if we can come down, sit with the community and say, hey, this has to be done. I mean, the mayor can do everything he wants to do, but what's happening there, he's got the council. That needs to prove things. He's got the state senate. He's got to deal with all these other agencies. So if he doesn't have the right guys in those leadership positions thinking of the same direction, buddy, everybody's going to go hell.
Jonathan, let me just leave you with this last thought. Is that I see Kauai as being such a gem that we should be able to limit car rentals. We should be able to limit actually the amount of tourists that we have. There's top shelf island, Barbados. Mm-hmm. And at any given time, they regulate how many people are allowed on that island. And they say, well, that's un-American. You can't say this guy can't fly over here or whatever, you know.
Yes.
But,
and the only reason
I think Kauai is so, such a gem that somebody's going to step up the plate and really start, you know.
Caller, I want to jump in on this a little bit.
Okay.
Because I was on the roads committee. We were looking at, you know, Foodland to the end of the road. And,
right.
And, you know, there's many people much greater than I that helped to save that Hanalei Bridge. But I was involved with that. Carol Wilcox really gets the gold star, Barbara Robeson, different things. Mm-hmm. We are people who you could blame for that road traffic because there was a lot of effort held to keep those bridges in place. But the thing behind keeping those bridges in place is it kept the big building out. And if the bridge had been replaced as had been planned and with federal highway monies all the way to KA, that would have been fat and thick, and it would be like you'd be driving out there at 45 miles an hour.
And it's not good.
And so we have these balances that we have to look at. And whenever I'm stuck in that traffic that you're speaking of,
right.
I have to say, okay, I asked for this by helping to keep that road small. But keeping the road small keeps the road rural, and that allows pedestrian traffic. And what happens with the state funding, if we use a state highway, there's like 90% the federal government will pay. Without that, like you'll see right past Princeville, it goes to zero again on the mile markers, and that's a county road, and that bridge is technically a monument. It's not technically a bridge.
Hanalei Bridge, yeah.
Hanalei Bridge is a monument, and so... If we can't do it very easily. The county to pay for the road is incredibly expensive. For the state to pay for the road without the federal monies, they can't afford to do it. And so we have that question of, do we have the huge, big bed, you know, embed road beds?
No, I don't think the solution is improved infrastructure at all. I think the solution is
closing the door. So if, then we're saying
KA, they're going to need to pay. Excuse me. They're going to need to pay to go down to KA. You know what I mean?
I got a solution for you to think about.
Okay.
We're talking about the car. If you build more roads, it's going to take us 10 years to get the funding and build the roads. Not considering the amount of fighting you're going to have for people who don't want the road.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. No way.
So you're not going to stop tourists from coming because the state's not going for that. You know, that's one of the economic engines.
Mm-hmm.
So what could be a solution? Require more buses. Put people on buses.
Good choice.
And you eliminate cars.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just. Say, for example, you can't rent a car at the airport.
Yeah.
You go, you take the shuttle to your hotel. When you want to go to Hanalei or Kokee, you rent a car. The rest of the time, you don't need a car.
And
have shuttle buses, like, say, in Poipu. If we had shuttle buses in Poipu, we'd eliminate 60% of the traffic.
Right.
And the parking.
What we've had a challenge with the buses, though, is the car rentals has made sure that the buses don't go straight to the airport. They have to take a feeder one and not to allow the luggage on the bus.
Felicia, this is just like GMO,
you know,
and anti-GMO.
That could change. So I think there's some good options out there. What's your name? Richard?
Jonathan.
Anyhow, sorry, cuz. Not a problem. I wanted to know what you thought you could do to help the summer time that it's you know, I've lived here 20 something years and I don't like seeing it, you know.
And
I got the high end to relax. I don't want to see bumper to bumper cars.
Color?
And, exactly. And a lot of tourists only riding two or three, sometimes it's the whole family.
And also that road itself, that Nepali, I don't think it's really that stable, you know.
Color?
And they've made improvements to it, but it was never meant to have as much traffic as it, you know.
Thank you, caller. I'm going to have to take you off the air now because it's almost time for Jazz with John. Aloha. Jonathan, you're still on here. Let's talk about what is your website. Very soon, we're going to have Jazz with John. I have the county council report coming up. I know how to spell your name, but why don't you spell it for people for ho'omanawanui.com so they can look it up and see how they can get more information about you.
Yes, Ho'omanawanui. We'll use it. We can pronounce it phonetic alphabet. It's Hotel Oscar, Mike Alpha November, Alpha Whiskey, Alpha November Uniform India.com.
Sound like you've been asked this question before.
Ho'omanawanui.com. Please take a look at that website and drop an email. I you know, my ears are open to everybody and all the questions they have. And I'm a very easily approachable guy. I play ukulele. I have fun. My mom speaks, you know, highly of me. But anyway, connected in the community. And thank you, everyone. I love all you guys. And I think we had a good discussion today.
Okay.
I look forward to having more discussions on your show.
Thank
Felicia
you.
Felicia and Uncle, you guys take care and aloha.
Aloha. Dave Bissell, CEO of Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. What would you like to share?
Yeah, aloha, Felicia and Teddy. I thought I heard you say something that I guess I was a little taken aback by. Something about the permits being something for derivatives.
That was something that we found. Pardon me? Yeah, like when that was found last, I don't know, when that issue was there, Scott Majors, who used to work in that industry, he had researched it, and he found that, and we, you know, showed that, that...
I mean, Felicia, that's utter nonsense. They were brought in to do a hydro development project for us. They have nothing to do with, other than some of the employees work for UBS and their bond side that hasn't, but it's nonsense to say that they were doing derivatives for UBS for trying to do the project on CIUC.
Well,
I'd like to correct that.
Okay, well, we, you know, and maybe I can have Scott pull that up again.
I don't need Scott on. I did the transaction with him. It was a development for consulting work. And it's utter nonsense, and I hope that doesn't get repeated as fact again on the radio.
Okay. I mean, I saw what I saw, but...
It's untrue. In repeating that, it's harmful. It's slanderous, and it's
as
not
of,
to repeat
as,
it. So.
Out of respect to you, I won't bring that up again.
Well, I appreciate that, and thank you for taking my call, and you guys have a great day.
Yeah, and please always feel free to call in, come in. You're very, very welcome here. And Marge really, really appreciated your presentation today and at the event. She said you did a great job.
We're always trying to be open, transparent.
Yep.
And we want to get the facts out.
Perfect.
So appreciate taking the call and appreciate you correcting that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
KKCR, you've got 15 seconds.
This is Jimmy calling.
Okay.
How are you guys, Jonathan? I'm from Tennessee. How are you guys doing?
Really, really quick, because we have to be off in about 1 minute.
Okay. Back to this problem that they were talking about, too much tourists and all that. You know what? Everybody got to be on with our master plan in Iona. What's going to be proposed? That's going to take care of the traffic, the tourist industry, and all that. We're going to need. We need to control all our stuff here. What that brother said earlier, you're on. We need to take care of our place. We need to control. That's number one. We as people that live here, we can't even go to the places that we want to go to because of that. The overload. We is too overloaded. You know, put one limit, and there's going to be a limit. Everybody get on board with the master plan in Hyena that's coming up. We need everybody behind them. That's the only way we're going to get this thing through. And you know what? We got to live the old days how it was before. We need to live the old days before. And another thing, what about emergency? Okay? I leave you guys with that.
Okay, Kaylee.
Aloha.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Aloha.
Aloha. Okay, Teddy, we are just about off the air. Do you have a final thought?
I think we'll have a lot of good stuff coming out of this local year conference and HANA, and hopefully we'll get the publicity or we'll have somebody write it up in the paper. It's something that's really important. It's free supermarkets for us, no carbon footprint, and it's something that our ancestors used and used very well. Thank you.
Okay. We got a caller. You get like 20 seconds, and then we're pow. Are you there? Aloha,
yeah.
You're on the air? Yes?
Hi, we need to, I just want to say that I think we need to stop creating like a fake demand and trying to bolster the numbers. And the Visitors Bureau is responsible for this. They're guilty of bringing more and more and more and more people coming here and also bringing in investors from other countries. They're basically, come on, Kauai for sale, and doing everything they can to just blast this place, you know, all over the world.
Okay,
and
thank you, caller. So you've gotten the last word.
Traffic.
Okay, aloha. All right, so this has been Kauai Soapbox with Felicia. Jazz with John is up next, and we're going to hear the county council report. And I appreciate all our callers.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of April 28th. This week should be the normal rotation for a council committee meeting. However, there is no agenda posted on the council website for this.